Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering.
Hey, tigers. We've got a deeply delicious episode for you here. I'm lucky enough to be snaffling the puddings of Newcastle Restaurant 21's head pastry chef, Helen Doyle. And oh my, please, they were so good. Fuck me. Off the charts, lads. What a smashing thing this world is sometimes. Thanks for listening to Hoovering, you stone-warm legends. Tell everyone else about it too, will you? That's the biggest favour you can do me ever. Just spreading the word. The second biggest favour you can do is give the podcast money. Go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod and you'll see all sorts of things I'll swap in exchange for money. Everything from guest recipes to tons of exclusive content to discount tickets to live shows. If you could give the podcast a 5-star review wherever you got it from, I'd love that. And subscribe to it too. Those are all my favours I have to ask of you. Oh no, I'm sorry, I've thought of one more. Will you please come and see me do my new show, Wench? It's going to be at the Edinburgh Festival all throughout August. I've only got one day off. And then from September through till the end of November, I'm touring the absolute socks off it. Go to my website, jessicafostercue.com, and there will be links to all of the tour dates, which are being added to all the time. If you look at it and think, oh, aren't you coming near my house? I might be. I'm just still waiting on the old confirmations for a few more to come in. Right, okay, let's have a podcast. No major warnings other than that Helen and I do get into some brief chat about fad dieting, but not, of course, in a celebratory way, like it ever would be. It's not possible for it to be. But words are spoken on the topic if you need to steer clear of that. I wish I'd grilled her more about calories on menus, actually. Next time. Okay, this time, Helen and me met in Newcastle as I was passing, and we met in her restaurant, 21, in the slightly more quiet mid-afternoon bit. Oh, we had a giggle. I can't believe how lucky I am sometimes.
You just let me know when you want the food to come.
Okay, well, we can do that whenever. We can do that whenever.
Christoph, do you want to let them know just to send the desserts out as soon as they're ready? Cool, thank you.
What an absolute touch. You must be thinking, I've turned it on, by the way, you must be thinking, who's this chancer who's basically just bundled along on a Wednesday afternoon to get some free puddings? Get in. If it makes you, I hate to admit it. Oh, maybe I can't. I just can't bring myself to say that straight away. Well, I want one of my first. Well, I've got so many questions, and actually, I'm going to go quite
idiot proof at the beginning, if that's all right.
Yeah.
What is a pastry chef, let alone a head pastry chef?
Oh,
because
God.
Because there is an assumption it's all to do with pastry.
Yes, there is an assumption.
Yeah, and it's not, right?
No, it's not. I mean, we do a lot of pastry, but it's ice cream, it's chocolate, it's bread, it's pastry, it's jellies, it's desserts.
Oh, God,
it's
jellies.
All kinds of things.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got a group of restaurants that we send, and so the pub is predominantly, we make the pork pies, we make the burger buns, and then we do the desserts for them and
brilliant.
Stuff. So it's quite versatile across the group of the different restaurants, the different styles of things.
Oh, it's so cool, because I mean, it sounds like, to the layperson like me, it feels, well, like King of the Puddings, it basically sounds like one of the most, sort of simultaneously one of the most sort of stressful, never-ending, sweaty, hard jobs.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, you've got every child's dream job.
Yeah, yeah. My little boy can't walk through the door without asking for a bowl of ice cream.
Well, I wanted to get to that, actually. We've got similar age kids. I think mine's 6.
Yeah, Alfie's 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think, I wonder if there's a lot, because I feel a little bit of pressure on me because I've got a podcast about eating that I'm meant to have a particularly gourmand, well-fed kid. And there's a lot of pressure, isn't there? Is your kid ever allowed just some nuggets and a Freddo?
Yes.
Yeah, for you.
It is real. And it has to happen to everyone, I'm afraid. But no, he does. And I always was very conscious that when he got to school, that probably most things that he was going to eat were going to be beige.
Yeah.
So we're in the beige era now.
Yeah, well, once you're at school, there's no stopping the beige.
Yeah.
Beige upon beige, is there? They're not going to, like, have 4 peas and
he does, and he's got a very sweet tooth.
Has he?
Has to come
I
from
I wonder if that is universal, actually. Has to come from what I spoke over you there.
Yeah, I think it's got to, I mean, I don't know, I was going to say it's got to come from him being around me a lot. And
yeah, and just, if you're making amazing stuff, I mean, you're the absolute dream mum for a 5-year-old. It's just puddings getting tested all the time, sweet things, heaven. My kids, I also, it feels really, I don't know, I'm building up too much. Is it all right to ask if, even though you're a pastry chef, would you always choose a pudding over a starter?
Oh, controversial.
Yeah, and whatever your answer is, do you have to say that?
So I'm going to say I actually would normally go for a starter because I generally crave salty things.
Me too. That was what I didn't want to confess as soon as I said hello.
Yeah.
I do like sweet things, but I'm an absolute starter bastard.
Yeah,
I've got a salt tooth, if anything.
Yeah, definitely. And I do, even when I was younger and I was on service.
Yeah.
Particularly in this kitchen, you're right next to the starter section, and I would eat any leftover salty salad that was in loads of dressing or anything that had loads of salt and vinegar and stuff on it. Yeah.
Oh, I'm into it. Had some salt and vinegar crisps on the train and just give me a lovely flashback. It's funny, isn't it? But then, like, starter chefs don't get their own special name like pastry chef, do they?
No.
We should invent one for them.
Yeah.
Like, what is
salty chef?
Pastries, exactly. Lettuce chef. It's never going to sound as sexy as pastry, is it?
No.
Nothing trumps pastry. Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Well, that's got the really contentious starters versus puddings chat out of the way. Tell me about something you've eaten in the last few weeks which has brought you a sort of memorable or extra amount compared to usual of joy or wonder or satisfaction, maybe.
Mm.
Something positive.
Without it sounding too wanky.
Oh, bring it. I mean, I've come up to Newcastle from London.
Okay.
You're talking to King of Wanky.
So,
I've got a bloody Mac on. I've got a rain Mac on.
So we have got an Amalfi lemon tart on the menu, which we're actually going to try. And it is just the absolute bomb. And I do find myself in the fridge sometimes at 5 o'clock in the morning ramming a slice of lemon tart down my throat.
Yes. Oh, my God, I'm so excited about that. I went... have you ever been to the Amalfi Coast?
I haven't, but we actually, that was one of the holidays that we cancelled with COVID.
Oh,
so we've still got it on the list,
okay.
But I do really want to go.
Oh, here's hoping. I went years ago. We took, just before he was too... whilst just going to say mad, too mad to take anywhere. We took my granddad to Sorrento, and it was extraordinary. And the lemons were the thing that are the sort of takeaway everywhere. I mean, there's bits of it that have become so touristy or whatever, but you can still eat extraordinary food. And we stayed in, this was a while ago now, but we stayed in the Hilton, and it was so, it was like really 90, it hadn't been done up since the 60s, but that made it cool.
Even better,
it was like being in Mad Men or something. But it's just lemon trees everywhere. Yeah. Just, and there's no one cares if you take a lemon off a tree, because it's all about it.
Yeah.
But I didn't love limoncello, I remember that. There's a little bit too much of that everywhere. But.
Yeah. I've been really into the Stanley Tucci thing recently.
Oh, yeah.
On BBC, and that's really, he's going all over Italy. That's really brought it back home to us needing to book a holiday.
Yeah, get over there. Yeah. Do you, as a chef, go on like holidays with eating in mind? I feel like I've only just become grown up enough to start.
I feel like
that.
That's pretty much all we do.
Really?
That is what the holiday is booked around.
Great.
So the restaurants are, or the market, or whatever is picked first, and then destination follows after that.
Oh, but does it potentially stop it being a holiday if you know that you're going like to gather ideas? And
no, it becomes, you're just excited to get there. I think because it's my husband's a chef as well, so it is predominantly our life. It's just too exciting, all of it, to do it and to get there and to try the stuff. And
I want to know now about some of your travelling eating adventures.
Just the culture around it as well. All of it. The culture, the life, the whole side. All of it is just what it's about. We went to the last holiday we had before COVID was Vietnam. And I still think about, I say to Martin like regularly, when will we ever get back to a point where we're sitting on a little stool in Vietnam? We got that the day we flew in there, we had Alfie with us as well. We found this chicken noodle on the corner of the street. It was a garage turned into a noodle joint.
Yes, please.
And we sat down and had ordered this bowl of noodles, got a couple of beers, and I started crying because it was just so amazing. Alfie was asleep in his pram, and I was just bawling my eyes out over this bowl of chicken noodles that cost about £1.50.
Oh, yes. I can picture it, you know, and I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. It's emotional to even hear about it. When something just hits the spot, isn't it? It's just a time and it's just a pinpoint in a moment.
It was the noise, it was the people, it was everything that was going on, and I was just, that was it. The noodles just finished me off.
Oh, God, it is lovely, isn't it? I remember, it's not the same, it's not so food related, but I remember being in Spain when my son was three, and he was a handful at three, and holidays didn't really feel like a holiday, like in that sense. But there was one afternoon where we were sort of enough in the shade, but it was still really sunny, and he'd fallen asleep with his head sort of on my lap, on my tummy, that I was reclined, and had an hour and a half there. And someone, well, I think it was my mum, bought me a margarita.
Bliss.
With like the salts around the rim and that lemon with that salt. And that, I remember having this. Oh, wow. Oh, my crumbs.
Yes, oh, my lovely. Crumbs. Thank you. Yeah, just stick them down. Thank you very much.
Oh, my God.
It is their memories, isn't it? The things like that that just absolutely bring it back. And I feel like we had a holiday. We actually go to San Sebastian. We've been quite a few times.
That's
now.
My dream list. That's on my bucket list, that place.
It's a must, especially with your child.
Yeah.
It's
really?
Got such a really good balance of, because it's right on the coast and it's right on the beach, and then the Pinchos bars are really close. And when you're stood in these Pinchos bars, it's so easy, and all the kids are out in the streets playing. The balance of child and adult is perfect.
Do you know what? I'm so glad you've said that. It's been on my list, but it's not been. He eats everything, but I wouldn't have thought to take him to places to have Pinchos 24/7, which would be what it's all about.
Yeah.
My only concern left about going there is that my girlfriend's vegetarian, and I wonder whether
she'll be fine. Totally fine. There's loads of stuff. I mean, don't get us wrong, there's other things on.
She would have to watch me eat a bit of octopus.
But there is a lot of veggie stuff as well. She'd be totally fine.
Oh my God, I can't wait. Right, and look at these. I wish the people listening could see this. Incredible. Oh, I don't want my shadowy hand in there. Oh my God, what's that flower on the roof of that?
So this is a rose panna cotta with Alfonso mangoes, and they have a really short season, but they're just in season at the minute.
There's an amazing comedian called Sindhu V who in the lockdowns went real viral with her obsession, sharing this love of these Alfonso mangoes. And she had some delivered to my house by a man in the middle of the night. It was the dodgiest thing that would ever happen. My whole road thought I was getting a load of drugs. He swerved up, parked. He looked so dodgy. And then he just had this tray of Alfonso mangoes. And she taught me how to eat them, not doing that sort of crisscross slice and then turning it inside out. She said, no, you just carve off quarters. And then, like, you just glide the quarter, like, down. Like, skin it, basically, but from the inside out with your whole face.
Yeah, perfect.
Oh, yeah. And that's those.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know we were in the season.
Yeah, just now. Rose panna cotta, Alfonso mango with cardamom sherbet, and then the Amalfi lemon tart. Dig in.
Cardamom sherbet. Oh, my God. Okay.
Enjoy.
Right. Oh, well, I mean, you're meant to try everything in one spoon.
You can go separate and then...
I'm going to go separate to start with. Oh, cardamom sherbet. I'm really giddy about. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Nice.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm a bit lost for words. That is so lovely. I didn't know what that was going to taste like. It's creamier than I expected it to be, but there's this really... Oh, it's so light.
Mm-hmm. And the rose balances really well with the Alfonso mango.
Okay, right. Oh, God. I already know what I'm in for. It's so... You don't expect it to be as perfumey, do you?
Oh, they're unreal. I think particularly with the Alfonsos, though, why it's such a good way to eat them, how your friend told you, is because the skin actually has loads of fragrance. So when you eat them like that off the skin, you get
that smell off the skin.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've never tried one of these and you're listening, it just sort of, it makes every other mango you've tasted just taste like water.
Yeah, it does.
Like sort of mango, tiny mango squash or something compared to... They are. I'm just carrying on.
I mean, we were down in London a couple of weeks ago with a young lad that we have at the minute in the pastry doing a competition, and the boxes and boxes of Alfonsos. We filled the car up on the way home.
Yes, get in. Well, my friend Sindhu's got a man. I'm sure he's driving in the middle of the night up to Newcastle. Oh, that biscuit's lovely too. I'm going in and one with all three things on. That's the first time I've got a cardamom. So nice. Whoa. What a fucking treat. That is amazing. God. What is a panna cotta? Mm-hmm. What is that?
It's just it's set cream, basically.
God, it's ice cream for grown-ups, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's not as cold as ice cream. I feel like you're getting a really different experience of all the flavours in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Thank you.
Thank you. Delicious. I didn't give myself a minute before I go into lemons and ask you other things. Would you talk to me about eating growing up? How did you end up being such a clever clogs at this? Was eating growing up really snazzy?
I don't know if it was snazzy. My mum would cook... though a lot. There was a lot of cooking. It wasn't always snazzy though, but it was always home cooked, which I think makes a bit of a difference. But I think it's predominantly it's working, it's a balance of traveling and working for a good company,
which I think
are the two things that have helped navigate me into knowing things and understanding things. But travel has a massive part to do with it.
That's exciting.
You've got to get out there.
Yeah.
You've got to experience it yourself.
Totally.
You've got to eat out. You've got to go and eat and as well. Hospitality is hospitality. You want to enjoy it. You want the customer to enjoy it. I want you to enjoy it.
Well, I really am. You're in no danger there whatsoever. it's so interesting, isn't it? But brought up on, I guess, as a child eating good food, were you never fussy as a kid?
No, I wasn't. No, there was never any fussiness. Not that I can remember anyways, and not that my mum and dad ever tell me that there was, but I don't think so, definitely not.
Would you have ever, was there anything else you ever wanted to do, or was it always this?
No, I left school as soon as I could.
Yeah.
I've got quite bad dyslexia, so I didn't enjoy, I enjoyed school, friends, all of that side of it. I didn't enjoy school though.
Yeah.
I left and went to college and kind of just, like a lot of people do in our industry, fell into catering.
Right.
In catering college, it was like, what am I going to do? So I ended up going to catering college. One thing I was really good at school was art.
I was quite arty. I've got quite a little bit of a flair like that. So,
well, this is art.
Yeah, it is, and I think it the two just merged in together. Yeah. I was only about 17, and I got my first pastry chef's job.
Wow.
So I left.
Bloody hell.
I left college.
It's a high pressure job for a 17-year-old.
I left college and moved out of home and went to live at the living hotel called Charabia over in the Lake District.
Okay.
And that was it. The rest was history.
Oh, that's so good. I love it. It's so interesting, actually, and lovely to hear that route of like, it's sort of what sort of applied creativity would work out, and then it sort of finds you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Which I think is hard. When I think about Alfie particularly, I worry that the schools don't have enough, they don't give you options of potentially having a successful career as a pastry chef or as the forestry commission or as a florist or as an artist. It just does seem very academic.
And in that way as well, where you go, at what point are we going to acknowledge that robots will be doing most of the jobs that we're still training children for?
Yeah.
Like with the style in which we're teaching maths and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you seem to need to be both politically up for it and a millionaire to send your kid to a school where they do focus on creativity and sort of left brain thinking. It's not fair yet, is it?
No, it's not.
I'm with you on that one. I panic regularly about that sort of thing. Although because I do such a silly job as stand-up, part of me does secretly hope my son becomes an accountant. I desperately wanted to have a bit more sort of security.
Yeah.
But he's already a fucking massive show-off, so I'm in trouble. But he's also a nerd, so there's a bit of hope. Yeah, he's got a few key rings on his belt at any given time. Massive geek. I mean, and I'm thank God. What else? I think it's funny, isn't it, if you look at people's motives for ending up with the job that they're in, and actually I think as worrying now as well is the idea that people might go into something like this, where I think even if you end up in comedy you've got more of an excuse for having this as your motivation, but to become a celebrity I think there's an element of that now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like it's kind of famous or bust.
Yeah.
And when that's your, I've found from the people I've met in my career doing that, it's not particularly happy path if that's where you're going. You've got to care about what it is you're making.
Absolutely, totally.
And how it's received in the room that you're delivering it in. I do think there's some parallels in there and with how it's changing. It's great that we've made our chefs celebrities in the sense that I think it gives you guys a bit more power over setting trends, certainly in terms of environmental consciousness and stuff like that.
Yeah.
A bit pushback against perhaps faddy environmental movements. And, you know, it's educational for people who are interested in it.
Yeah, it's highlighted a lot of things that go on in our industry as well. And stuff like
absolutely,
that.
In terms of how people are treated and stuff like that. And when we were talking in advance of doing this, you were saying one of the things you're really keen to talk about is getting more people just back into
the
job.
Industry,
it's
really, it's quite scary that Brexit and COVID and how they've affected our industry massively. It's quite depressing actually.
I want to get into Brexit. I think people understand we're still in too much at the coal face of everything that's happened with COVID, and I guess that's literally just places have closed down because they couldn't continue through the lockdowns and weren't given sufficient support to be all right through being shut down all that time. It's funny, isn't it? I mean, I don't mind slagging the government off.
Neither.
Good. Well, there we go. Let's relax and get into some of that then. It feels like you get lots of these sort of, I mean, it's a bad example because he's awesome, but some sort of, they love to find an individual whose story you can lord up as someone who, against all odds, set up, you know, they weren't working in their restaurant anymore, so they set up from their own kitchen and became a billionaire, and they also fed the homeless. You're like, that's going to be one in how many people whose livelihood that was.
Yeah.
It's just not how the world works that we then all become individualistic heroes like that. Talk to me about Brexit then, because I think that's one that there's a little bit less sort of understanding.
I just don't think I don't think anybody realises how many different cultures are behind the scenes.
Yeah.
They just don't. Nobody understands that or realises the manpower and how many the mix of people and cultures that makes something tick.
Yeah.
And it's quite, it's really depressing. I mean, I've got friends in London who do the same job as me, and they were saying that COVID hadn't even really affected them, but Brexit had absolutely floored them.
Okay.
Because there's just so many people that have gone home.
Right.
And there's huge workforces that just aren't there anymore, which is just absolutely devastating for them and for us. And I think it becomes a point, especially with COVID to add in the mix as well, that we didn't, everybody kind of started to forget that this is hospitality. And hospitality is supposed to be about enjoying food round a table with friends and family.
Yeah.
And that was all, and that just was slowly disappearing, and it was turning into a fight, and everybody was treading water and trying to survive. But it's slowly coming back. You can feel it. We'd done a takeout here, a 21 at home takeout.
Amazing.
And it was amazing. But there were so many times where you'd walk into the restaurant and the restaurant was empty and the lights were off, and it was just devastating. You were desperate to see some people sat around a table enjoying some food and having a nice time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that takes culture, and it takes workforce, and it takes people, and then people just aren't there anymore, which is quite sad.
So, yeah, because I think my first instinct when you say the impact of Brexit, it's literally, oh, maybe I'm such a basic bitch, but my thought was like, oh, you can't, we haven't got the access to products, to foods.
No, that's
that
a stuff. Huge part of it
is
as well.
It?
Yeah.
But it is, and as much as that,
yeah,
the physical humans
aren't,
if you're not welcome to, work here. Oh.
I know.
What a mad thing, actually. And the impact of that's only going to get exacerbated over time, because at the moment we've still got the people who have stayed living here from pre-Brexit, but as time goes on, we're going to have less and less access to.
Yeah.
How are we expecting to fill those places?
I don't know.
You know, we didn't get the lockdown baby boom that we were hoping. We'd have needed 15 years before they could even help us with a bit of waiting work, washing up.
Yeah. That's
we're now going to have to get Alfie and Rudy washing up into cookery earlier than we'd planned. It's the only way forward. But like you were saying as well, then a crucial part of becoming kind of amazing at that is the travel.
Yeah.
You've just put a massive
obstacle
in the way of that. Mm-hmm. It's certainly in terms of going, well, I'm going to really experience the eating culture of this place, not just go for a holiday, I'm going to live there for 6 months.
Yeah, or, I mean, I was heartbroken by it, thinking of, not so much about thinking of, about myself, but thinking about Alfie being able to go and work in some of these other countries and stuff, that is no longer as easy or as accessible anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a...
It's a bit of a heart fuck, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, some sillier questions then. But also, first, can I try that lemon one?
Yeah, get into the lemon tart.
What's in that?
That's just a Chantilly cream next to it.
Just a... Oh, did you hear that? Oh, it's a good noise for a podcast. That was me cutting through the big... I'm just using my thumb. Don't tell anyone. I'm a trollop. I'm sorry, Alex. Forgive me. I've gone for quite a big bit. Oh, fucking hell.
That's so good, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, so obvious. I was about to say it starts at the front and goes to the back. But do you know what I mean? I feel like it sets fireworks off in order from the front to the back of your tongue. Is that to do with how the different taste buds for the different things
hits the hook, the salty, the sweet. All of them.
And then
this goes
sour, like shimmering, like a sherbet, like a fizzy.
That's it.
Right at the back, like right at the vocal cords.
Yeah.
Or I could be forgiven for momentarily think I'm an all right singer. Just for the excitement that goes on in that moment when the really sourest bit hits you in the back.
It is very good, I must admit.
It's so good. Oh God, I need to finger some questions. I've got longer answers. Have you ever accidentally, or indeed on purpose, eaten anything that wasn't food?
Oh. Well, I'm trying to think.
What? By the way, can I eat this flour?
Yeah, you can. I don't think I have. I've got a bit of a funny story when I was younger.
Yeah.
I didn't eat it, but one of my old head pastry chefs, she'll kill me for telling you this. The front of house used to eat all the chocolates that we used to make, the petit fours that we used to make. So, you know when you get the polystyrene things in boxes?
Yeah.
When deliveries come in, I don't know if you, like, we get big deliveries in and they've got these white polystyrene things in. They're blue now, actually, because they're a bit more eco-friendly. Anyways, she got me to dip a load of them in chocolate and put them on the pass. So the front of house would pick them up and eat them.
Amazing. And did they?
Yeah.
And did they pretend to like them?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's how much of our eating we do with our like anticipation and our back brain, isn't it? That we'd be like, oh, yum yum, what's inside those?
I know. So yeah, that I didn't, but they did.
Oh, absolutely brilliant. I've really enjoyed eating that, Rose.
Good.
That was really great.
Yeah.
I mean, it does taste like you. It's going to taste, doesn't it? Just a taste of a rose. Mm-hmm. Why aren't we scoffing roses all the time? I feel like all anyone talks about is that nastertiums are edible, but I've never...
Roses. They're beautiful. They're really lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It had a real, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very flavoursome.
Yeah, that's how you say it.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact... You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Well, I mean, I ask everybody this, but for you, I wonder... if it's a worse or a better question, but like, how does what you do for work affect how you eat?
Oh God, I probably don't eat anything sweet at all.
Right.
If anything, it'll be maybe like a packet of Haribos or something like that. But definitely, I don't.
Tangfastic or original?
Yeah, no,
Tang.
Thank you. I don't bake at home. Absolutely
fine.
Not.
Fine. Absolutely fine.
I'll cook at home. I definitely don't do any baking.
Great.
So, yeah. I don't know, really.
Does it stop the hours that you work affect... I don't know. So over the course of this... I've been doing this podcast for like 4 years, and in that time I've been on a real journey with my eating and sort of come out of a lifetime of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly kind of just cycles of shitty diets that are inevitably going to fail, followed by binging, followed by just misery, and read some great stuff. Bit of a sort of re-education.
Yeah.
And I'm very lucky, some really good therapy. And the podcast has helped. But over the course of that time, I've learned that for me to be happy, I need to eat with fuck all rules very intuitively and try and sort of... see what I feel like and then have it, or see if I'm hungry and have it, and see if I'm full and stop, etc. And I do wonder whether I do kind of realise the privilege I have in having the self-employment that I have, in the sense that is, I'm very busy, sometimes that can hinder effect, like how well I can notice if I'm hungry or full or whatever, but I can generally, and financially I'm very fucking lucky, I can generally choose when to eat and what to eat.
Yeah, I understand what you mean now.
And
I
wonder whether actually when you work in a kitchen that is the hardest job to have and still connect to those things.
Yeah, it is difficult. Yeah. I would say it was a lot more difficult when I was younger.
Right.
And I'd say that Alfie was a turning point as well, because I wanted to cook for both of us.
Yeah.
It wasn't just me surviving really at that point.
Yeah.
Which you do when you're younger, don't you?
Yeah.
So I would say definitely as I got older, after having Alfie, I definitely became more aware.
Yeah.
I was more comfortable.
Yeah.
Probably the most comfortable I ever was in myself as well, believe it or not, after having a baby, which you would probably think would be the other way around. Maybe.
Oh, no, I had the same thing. I felt like a superhero walking around. I'd get naked in swimming pool changing rooms when I was pregnant. In a way that I'd never cooked before, and probably wouldn't do since. But like, I thought, this body's serving a purpose and I couldn't give a shit what you think.
Yeah.
It was amazing feeling.
Yeah. So freeing. Definitely since Alfie it's got better, but yeah, I would say you're just so busy, and when you're younger, you want the hours, you want to be in there, you want to be travelling, you want to be stuck in there and getting in the mix. So I probably was just grabbing things that weren't particularly healthy, weren't particularly, it was just fuel, I think, for a long time. But I would say now, 100%, cooking, eating.
Yeah.
And it's enjoyable more at home because we want to make sure we sit around the table a couple of times a week at least. Granted, I will sometimes just give him a Weetabix and a banana as well.
Fair play. Absolutely fair play.
But it is.
Is he a good eater? He is.
He's very good.
That's good.
Yeah, he is.
I'm very lucky in that Rudy's a really good eater, but he's very pernickety at the moment about how things are displayed, and he's got a very disappointing chef parent in me. But Weetabix made me think of that, because the other morning he said he'd have Weetabix for the first time in ages. Uh-huh. He was up for Weetabix, but I had to make it look like it is on the box. And they've got two sort of like nestled on top of each other in a fan shape. Who the fuck's having their Weetabix like that? You could see three blueberries, so that was all he'd have. So I had to tuck a few more underneath. He was like, I can't see them. It had strawberries on it, which I didn't have.
Aren't they funny?
So he was like, well, where are they? All you need is two strawberries. I was like, no one's selling me two strawberries, love. And then he would only eat it if I like splashed, because in the picture, the milk's splashing up the side. Right, so I had to sort of like really chuck the milk in. I can't believe I pandered to it. Now I'm telling you about it, I feel embarrassed that I've pandered
to it. You do, though, don't you? Yeah, you do.
Well, just to get...
Yeah, yeah, you find yourself doing all kinds of things like that. Yeah.
Oh, and I mean, the yin and the yang in terms of like health. I can get myself porridge, which I don't even like, so that's hypocritical. Yeah. I mean, I don't hate it, but it's never like, what I really want is this. But he'll have porridge with like blueberries and seeds. And he'll only have that if there's also Biscoff and jam. And you can't knock it, really, can you? He knows. No. They get to a certain point and they know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And they know how to play you.
Yeah, absolutely. No, they do, definitely.
Yeah.
We've actually got a farm that's close to us that
is,
through COVID, started doing the milk dispensing, you know, the dispense milk stuff.
Oh, incredible.
So we were going up and buying that through the lockdown and have continued since. But I bought some milk from the supermarket the other day and gave it to him, and he just turned his nose up and pushed it back my way. Oh, I was like, God, that was, yeah. And then we were on the train coming back from York one day, and he was like, Mum, I really want a piece of Battenberg. And I was like, okay, you're probably the only four-year-old that I know that's asking for a bit of Battenberg.
Specifically Battenberg.
And then he got louder and louder, and you could see all these people on the train just being like, what is this child on about wanting Battenberg? And I was like, I looked at Martin, I was like, someone needs to get him to shut up. I haven't got any Battenberg with me.
My friend had the funniest one of these that I've ever heard. It was her niece, actually, but they'd been away visiting friends for a weekend, all of them, and it was a big night, you know, like kids all had a massive sleepover, everyone's hanging the next day, so they just went to like a proper side of the road greasy spoon, where you've just got like 10 variations on the same fry up, basically, with or without, fry bread, whatever. And then the woman working in there was lovely and said to their, at the time, three-year-old niece, do you want some squash or some milk? And she went, have you got any elderflower?
Yeah, well, it was one of them moments. Yeah. I wanted the train to just open up and swallow me up.
Elderflower. What?
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
I think it's funny, isn't it? I don't think so. I think I was brought up with some really great food, but it just wasn't snazzy. Even the difference, I've got half sisters and a brother, but they're all like, they all came along once I was 16 and older. But the difference in them as well, I remember my sister saying to my mum as a teenager, I only like peppers if they're roasted. And thinking, I didn't know I had a roasted pepper in the 90s, the 80s. Didn't know to roast a bloody pepper.
No, absolutely not.
I can't ask you that. You're a chef. Have you ever... I'm going to do it. It's coming out of my mouth. Have you ever eaten food intended for a pet?
No, I haven't. No,
okay, great. No problem. Has someone's behaviour... This is a good one maybe for you. Has someone's behaviour when it comes to eating ever put you off them as a person?
Yeah.
I mean, it must have done in terms of customers.
Yeah. Yes. Customers.
But also friends as well. I
mean, customers regularly.
I love to hear it.
But
I,
yes.
I love that so much.
There is a handful of friends that yeah. will irritate me no end.
Right. With fussiness? Or?
Fussiness, lack of education, I suppose it yeah. Is what it comes down to. But
sometimes just got the wrong opinion.
Yeah. 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 But yeah, regularly, particularly I've got some friends at home, sorry guys, but they are just sometimes it just irritates me, you know, I'm pescatarian, but I'll eat this, but I'll eat that.
Oh yeah, same. Yeah, yeah.
And it just, it drives me, I can feel myself sweating when I'm sat next to them.
I think part of the problem is that we're in an era. At time of recording, it's 2022, and I'm in the middle of writing a new show, and it's fascinating to me. We're in an era of obsession with labels yeah. and picking identities
yeah.
and having really fucking long, complicated identities. Mm-hmm. Like, weirdly, it's made everything a bit more exclusatory, mm-hmm. I think, because is there probably one 17-year-old anywhere who mm-hmm. understands everything
mm-hmm.
that is the possible option out there in terms of labelling? And when you do it in terms of identifying as somebody who eats in a certain way,
it's so unhealthy.
It's a minefield.
It's well, so
also,
unhealthy.
It is so unhealthy. This is it. You're obsessed. It's yeah. an obsession.
It's
you're
so
constantly
unhealthy.
Looking out for things you do or don't like or can or can't have.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks they've got fucking gluten intolerance.
Yeah.
Have they shit?
Yeah. It's so unhealthy, and I really struggle with, because sugar's a really
it's right now's demon,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
When we were growing up, it was fat,
mm-hmm.
and then, well, for me anyway, through my teens and 20s, it became carbs.
Yeah.
Well, 20s and early 30s, but now it's sugar.
And I understand that. I do. I understand,
yeah,
and
sure.
I get it, and I understand levels of it. But if you're gonna just don't eat a load of shit.
Yeah.
The rest of the time,
yeah.
and come in and have a nice slice of El Malfi lemon tart.
If you're going to have a quota on how much sugar you have, it's coming here and having pudding
yeah.
to use
and
that
just,
quota up
yeah.
by.
Instead of it, and I do, you know, there's a huge, I mean, this could go on forever, there's
yeah.
a huge battle with hidden sugars that go in everything left, right
yeah,
and centre.
Yeah, of course, that we don't know.
But it is, it's so unhealthy.
Yeah.
All of the fads, all of the identities, it's super...
It's just sort of obsession and control, isn't it? As
yeah.
opposed to, I suppose it goes back to that intuition. Your body tells you quite quickly if you've had more sugar.
Yeah.
You feel like shit.
Yeah.
If you've had more,
yeah.
like, stuff that's really packed with processed sugars and stuff.
Absolutely,
and,
you do.
And not.
Yeah.
So you can trust your body mm-hmm. to stop you. I think
yeah.
when people go, I have a friend, I'm going to leave this in. A friend who's got a really successful podcast called The Guilty Feminist called Deborah, who's paid someone to... put her on an ayahuasca trip so that she could have revelations about herself, and she seems to have mainly come away having learnt from the ether that she's got a sugar addiction. Oh, Debs, we've had it out, and I've tried to explain it. You can't technically, I don't think, be addicted to sugar, but you can. But it's that, what that, my problem with that, and problems is a bit strong, I'm mainly tickled by it, but my thought on that is, I think when you go down that road of like, well, it's an addiction, I'm going to have a zero sugar diet, I'm going to do this, or I'm allowed this many grams of something, that road leads to restriction.
It's terrible. I'd done it. I'd done a fad diet before I got married.
Right.
Fad diet, fad exercise.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the worst thing I ever done, because I lost loads of weight,
yeah.
but put loads of weight straight back on after it.
Yeah.
But found myself one night, because there was no sugar allowed.
Yeah.
Ringing my husband, who was leaving work at 11 or midnight, to, you have to go and find a shop that's open and get me some Haribos.
Yeah.
I think I would have probably killed him if he had, and then I sat in it and just wolfed the whole packet down.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Well, that's it. And then your body's like, what the fuck is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Either way, isn't it?
Yeah.
And like, all of them, all the ones where you're like, well, I have got terrible headaches, but you know, I've got a body. And you're like, well, do you think that terrible headaches is probably a sign you should have
that cup of coffee? Or,
yeah,
yeah,
exactly. My God. Yes, it is bizarre what we do to ourselves. Have you always had a pretty... have you always had a good relationship with eating historically, even through your teens and stuff?
Probably, I'd probably say not with my teens.
No.
Just through, there's this terrible obsession, isn't there, that you should lose weight and
yeah.
that you should be tiny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm not tiny. I never will be. There's too many boobs and too many too many bums.
How many bums have you got?
No matter how much weight I lost, they've never disappeared. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I would say probably in my teens. Not that anything that sticks in my mind vividly.
Yeah.
But I would say I was always really conscious, and obviously before I got married, I went on that stupid diet and stupid exercise, because you've got this obsession, haven't you? Which is a worry, and because I feel like that's all intensified since I was a kid.
God, social media, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't remember ever having any makeup on. I used to wear my brother's hand-me-downs. I can't remember ever getting done up really that much. So it is quite terrifying that's just magnituded, if that's the right word, to another level.
Totally another level, isn't it? Yeah, we were just kind of had it hammered in that if you're thin, you're better.
Yeah.
The thinner you are, the better you are.
Yeah.
And that was very, of its time. But now there's that, and there's, augmented reality, effectively.
Yeah.
Genuinely impossible mm-hmm. waistlines. Yeah. Whatever you did, you know. And I'm not even going to get into surgeries and stuff.
I know. I would be here all night.
Worst looking or smelling but best tasting thing you've ever eaten?
Wow. Worst looking, worst smelling?
It could be looking or smelling.
I'm probably going to say Vietnam.
Okay.
Where my husband had, I think they called it a fermented egg.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Which still had little chick's feet in it. Yeah. Possibly one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. And Martin will try anything.
Yeah.
And she was banging on about them, this woman on this food stall. So he got one and he couldn't even stomach. And he's got the stomach of an iron rod.
Yeah.
And it was just her. And she sprinkled it with salt as well.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
But that's got to be...
This will really bring out the claws... The sort of nuttiness of the knuckles.
Yeah. So that's got to be, that has to be that's one of the worst. There. Yeah.
Fermented egg.
Mm-hmm.
Up to you, listeners, if you Google that. I don't know that I will be. I'm not sure that I will be. Well, because of what we're eating is so extraordinary, and because of your skills, with a Z on the end, what's the swankiest thing you've ever eaten?
Swankiest.
I mean, and before you had tried this lemon tart,
is it swanky? I don't know. There's a restaurant called Chez Ami Louis in Paris, which is an absolute, just the pinnacle of French bistro, tiny little restaurant that you go into and the smell that hits you straight away. I would say it's probably one of my fondest memories of eating. The whole meal. So I don't know if it's one dish that was swanky, but maybe it's just the whole experience, the smell, watching the chefs in the kitchen, and just how simple all the food was, but how incredibly tasty it was as well.
Brilliant.
So that was that's probably one of the fondest memories, I'd say, of a restaurant experience.
Oh, I love to hear it. Oh God, I kept for bloody ages. Just spat down myself. Just gobbed down myself. Did you see that? Thank God it's a podcast. I'll leave that in. I was having such a nice time with that lemon. Just a bit just flopped back out of my mouth. Just dribbling at you. Jesus Christ. Just some quick questions. A 5-second rule, yes or no?
Oh, no.
No. It's because of your work life, that.
Yeah.
Even at home.
It's
a no. It's a no. Don't force yourself into a yes. It's fine. Hangover, what are you having?
Bloody Mary.
Great. Yes. Yes. No one said that for ages.
Yeah, it's got to
be. I'm not sure anyone said it that specifically either. or quickly. Spicy or not?
Spicy. Has to be.
Talk me through your Bloody Mary, because this is going
to
be good.
It's got to have a bit of horseradish in there.
Yeah.
It's got to be really quite spicy and quite salty as well.
Yes.
And that, as long as it 100% the celery, as long as it's almost a meal in a glass, isn't it? And that is about the only thing that really does pull me round.
Yeah. Oh, it's maybe one more now and I haven't got a hangover. There's no other option. Would you eat a person?
Yes.
I think we know your husband would, and you would too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. All right, great.
Scrumdiliances.
Yeah, but what would you sound like if you said it now in a big boy voice?
Scrumdiliances.
Yeah, pretty cool.
A tiger slips on a banana and it triggers a tear in time and space, which means that every time anyone feels sad or guilty, they melt into a puddle of dust, which obviously is catching because it's so sad and you feel so bad because you made someone feel sad. So every time you're watching someone melt to a puddle of dust, that makes you feel sad, so you melt to a puddle of dust. Basically, it's a really terrible apocalypse. Eventually, it's only psychopaths left, which is worse than no one at all. It's brutal. Luckily, the tear in space and time has promised to heal and revert us back to before it tore, but only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, Helen, carry a mini, the car, full of tins of beans up the Angel of the North and abseil back down it with it, that car of beans on your back, all the while blowing raspberries constantly so that no one is able to throw any snacks into your mouth to help you on your way. It sounds impossible, but you do it! You're a hero! Your reward is the adulation of all people for all time. You've saved us from a really terrible apocalypse. But your reward in the moment is the feast of your dreams. And bear in mind, that was knackering getting up and down that angel with that car. You've had no snacks the whole time. It probably took you near on a day. So you're starving. This is the opposite of a last meal in the sense that you couldn't be happier and you couldn't be hungrier. So, and calmer. You can reset, have a bath, whatever.
Uh-huh.
But it's like, imagine your optimum eating time.
Uh-huh.
Pressure free. It's a fantasy.
Yeah.
I want to know what you'd eat and what you'd drink. You can have a who, with, and where if there's a who, with, and where. And also, I think the other thing to say is that me and anyone listening is aware that this is your only answer now. And if I'd asked you in an hour even, you could give a different answer. I don't care about the health, ethics, anything. It's a fantasy situation.
Right. So I think mine would be a grilled, barbecued whole turbot.
Oh, so good.
With a green salad.
Oh, what's... Oh, green salad. You've said that as if... I mean, that could mean so many things.
It could. Green salad, potatoes.
Mm. What sort of potatoes? Boiled?
No, maybe Jersey Royals, but maybe like a Dauphinoise kind of thing.
Oh.
With a really, really good bottle of Chardonnay.
Oof.
And then to finish, I'm an absolute stickler for strawberries and cream with meringues.
Mmm.
Love
lovely.
It. Yeah.
A friend did that recently for a kid's first birthday party, and I thought, well, you've set the bar far too high too soon.
Thanks.
You're only one.
Yeah.
Nice. Strawberries, cream and meringues.
Yeah.
And where's your Chardonnay coming from? Or do you not care?
No, I think I do. I think they've got a really nice one here that's from Italy.
Okay.
An Italian Chardonnay. I'm sure it is. I can't quite remember. But yeah, Chardonnay got a really bad name for itself a couple of, like, however many years ago.
I don't care at all about what is and isn't in
and
fashion.
And I'm a massive Chardonnay fan.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? It's a funny thing. I mean, I digress. But like, wine is one of those fascinating things where... Who's setting trends on that stuff? It's fashion.
Yeah,
it's all fashion.
Well, food is as well. Yeah,
yeah, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah, but that would be my ultimate chilling with some friends, family style, all the food in the middle of the table, good bottles of wine.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love it.
Job
Thank
done.
You. And I just quickly want to ask you, because I do feel like we were talking about fashion, and I feel like chefs get to set some trends. I want to know what's coming next. Like, when I first started this podcast, everything was pulled fucking everything.
Yeah.
And then barbecue-y, sickly pulled, like, and then that was done badly and everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, what's the thing that's right now in your restaurant that's going to trickle down and be on every Wetherspoons menu within a year?
Definitely the thing that's
not going to be Alfonso Mango, that's for fucking sure.
No, definitely the thing that's very trendy at the minute is like wine bars with small plates. That's quite a thing.
Small plates. Just a word, small plates.
Yeah.
I mean, I want a big plate.
Yeah.
Give me a big plate and that stuff.
Yeah. That's definitely a thing at the minute.
Small plates.
I mean, this restaurant's very classical, so it doesn't really, and it doesn't verge away from that. But some of our other ones, our pub goes into a bit of stuff like that. And then we've got St. Vincent, the wine bar across the road, that ventures into stuff that's a little bit more trendy. I think there's a lot, do you know what? I'm not really sure. A lot of, I'd say, the Basque country are doing quite well, like with their style of cooking, like the barbecued fish and stuff like that is doing very well at the minute.
That's going to be on everyone's summer barbecue, do you think?
Yeah.
A blooming turbot.
Yeah. That does well.
Contribution, so fit. That's so good. Thank you for letting me try your snazzy puddings.
My pleasure.
And thank you for doing my silly podcast.
My pleasure.
Oh my fuck, that rose panna cotta thing. Ah, I've had upwards of 3 dreams about it since, and whenever I think about it, I feel like crying in a good way. Follow Helen on Instagram. She's at HelenDoyle83. That's D-O-Y-L-E, the Doyle bit. Follow us. We're at The Hoovering Pod. And I am at Jessica Fostercue on Instagram, on Twitter. Come and see me on tour, please. My show is called Wench. I'm in Edinburgh. And then from September to December, I'm going all around the UK and adding dates in other places too soon, hopefully. Go and eat Helen's food. Go to 21 in Newcastle, where she's cooking the puds. I think she makes the puds for a group of restaurants in Newcastle. Follow her on Instagram and you'll find out what she's up to and where to find her flipping delicious sweet things. If you want to give the podcast any of your spare money, I'd love that. Go to Acast Supporter or Patreon. Links to everything I've just mentioned there, and links to the interesting things Helen and I mentioned throughout that episode of Hoovering there, are, as ever, in the podcast notes. I write them, which takes a while, so please do use them. Anything longer than a tweet you want to send me, if you want links to where to buy tickets to see me do stand-up, go to my website, jessicafostercue.com. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham, and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until in 2 weeks, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.